Coming to you from an undisclosed location in the mutant-haunted wasteland of the cursed earth, this is the first Longbox Graveyard Podcast. Thanks for listening. My name is Paul O'Connor, and in the next half hour or so, I will introduce you to the Longbox Graveyard, outline what's coming up at my site over the next month, announce my panel at the upcoming San Diego Comic-Con, and also provide you with this month's feature, which is Childish Things. This is not only the first Longbox Graveyard podcast, it is also my first solo podcast of any kind. So thank you in advance for your patience as I explore this new form of media. And thanks again for listening. Introductions. What the heck is a Longbox Graveyard? As I mentioned a moment ago, my name is Paul O'Connor, and I blog, and now podcast, about comic books. For the last year, I've been the author of the Longbox Graveyard comic book blog. You can find me at www.longboxgraveyard.com, where a new blog is published every Wednesday. Last week, on June 13th, I published my 52nd blog in 52 weeks, looking back on the year gone by. Longbox Graveyard primarily covers the Silver and Bronze Age of comics, from the early 1960s to the mid to late 1980s. I started the blog last summer after seeing Thor in the movie theater with my family. My youngest boy, Jack, turned to me after the film and asked if I had any Thor comics. I answered, "You bet I do," but then realized I couldn't lay my hands on them. At that point, I became acutely aware of the difference between a collection and an accumulation. What good is having a huge pile of comic books if you can't find the one you want? The Longbox Graveyard is definitely an accumulation. Worse, it's a graveyard. A graveyard of comic book long boxes in my garage, all jumbled up and neglected for decades. I dropped out of comics 20 years ago, and the boxes have been sealed ever since. With Jack finally expressing an interest in comics, I figured it was time to get that accumulation organized, and I started the Longbox Graveyard blog to help me stay on track. What started as a small personal blog about comics has grown into a moderately popular public blog, as I've gone on to write reviews and essays about comics. I've done several features and a couple interviews, too. My first year on the blog was long on books like Captain America and Walt Simonson's Run on Thor. I also looked at Conan. And I spent a lot of time on Marvel's cosmic books like Captain Marvel, Warlock, and the Silver Surfer. There was a bit of DC coverage, too, and a couple blogs about digital comics, like the Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited subscription service and the very clever Operation Ajax iPad application, which is the best example I've yet found of how technology and comics can come together in a new form of storytelling for a new century. While my focus has been on the 1970s and 1980s, I've also reached outside that frame, for instance, with a review of the original Flash stories from Showcase in 1956, or more recently with reviews of Ed Brubaker's run on Captain America, and a review of Grant Morrison's History of Comics, Supergods. There's a little something for everyone at Longbox Graveyard. I hope you will check out the site. Go to www.longboxgraveyard.com to view my current article. Hit the checklist link at the top of the page, and you'll see headline summaries of every column I've published these past 52 weeks. Who am I, aside from being an opinionated blogger who's happy to talk about himself? Well, again, I am Paul O'Connor, and I've been a comics fan off and on since the early 1970s. When I started buying comics, you could get five DCs for a dollar, or four Marvels, and I really dug the Marvels. For a number of reasons I will explore in this and future podcasts, I generally prefer those old books to anything published today. My interest in comics led me into a brief and not terribly successful career as a comic book writer for Malibu Comics in the late 80s and early 90s. I wrote 50 or 60 scripts and lived entirely, if not well, off my freelancing in those days, so I do have some insight on the creative side of the business. At least, I know what it takes to sustain a story for 22 pages month after month, as well as the realities of working with artists and editors. For most of my professional life, though, I've been a video game creator, starting with games for the Atari 2600, and continuing to this day. I was lead designer for Oddworld Inhabitants on their first two Oddworld games for PlayStation, and as a founding member of High Moon Studios, I co-created Darkwatch, a gothic vampire western, which appeared on Xbox and PlayStation 2, and for which we did a comic story in Heavy Metal Magazine back in 2005. That was my last published comic book work. Since 2008, I've been a founding partner of Appy Entertainment, an iPhone and iPad developer and publisher. Our games include titles like Facefighter, Trucks and Skulls, and Spellcraft School of Magic, which have been downloaded nearly 17 million times. All of these titles are free-to-play games, so if you'd like a painless way to support me and this podcast, please download them and check them out on your iOS device. I don't plan to cover apps or games on this podcast, but I mention it so that you understand that I have a background in creative work, that I've created or developed original entertainment properties, that I've marketed them and made my living by them down through the years, which gives me some insight on the creative process. I don't presently work in comics, but I remain an interested observer, with friends and old colleagues still working in the business all over the place, and one of my partners at Appy, Chris Ulm, was a founder and editor-in-chief of Malibu Comics, and we kibitz back and forth about comics all the time. I've also been a speaker at games industry shows like the Game Developers Conference in Austin, Texas, and San Francisco, California. And earlier this year, I hosted a panel at WonderCon in Anaheim, which is as good an excuse as any to dispense with the introductions and get on to the news. My biggest and most time-sensitive news is that I'm hosting a panel discussion at San Diego Comic-Con. It's a Malibu Comics retrospective, and I'll be interviewing the founding partners of the company that created the Ultraverse and launched Image Comics, that also published original properties like Men in Black, and that had a forward-looking approach to creators' rights that I think can still be a part of the dialogue today, maybe today more than ever. Joining me for the panel will be president and founder of Malibu Comics, Scott Rosenberg, publisher Dave Ulbrich, VP of Marketing Tom Mason, and Editor-in-Chief Chris Ulm. The panel will be on Thursday, July 12th, from 2 to 3 p.m. in room 32AB. And if you're going to be at Comic-Con, I hope you'll drop by to sit in on the panel or just say hi. The guys are engaging speakers. They have a wealth of stories to share, not just about Malibu, but about the business and history of comics. If you want a taste of what will be on offer, check out the We Talk Comics podcast, special edition from May 27th, where the We Talk Comics crew interviewed Chris and Dave and got some really good and funny stuff about the early days of Malibu, Image Comics, and the Ultraverse. Again, that panel will be on Thursday, the 12th of July, at San Diego Comic-Con, room 32AB, from 2 to 3 p.m. I hope to see you there. Until then, here's a brief rundown of what you'll find at Longbox Graveyard in the next month. Remember that a new blog is published every Wednesday at www.longboxgraveyard.com. On Wednesday, June 20th, I'll have a review of the Infinity Gauntlet miniseries from 1990 by Jim Starlin, George Perez, and Ron Lim. The gentleman behind the counter at the very groovy House of Secrets comic shop in Burbank, California, told me this graphic novel has been flying off the shelves since the end credits reveal of a certain villain in Avengers. So join me as I look back at this comic series that may prove more timely than ever as we gear up for an Avengers sequel and more Marvel movies over the next several years. The following Wednesday, June 27th, I'll have one of my top 10 lists. This time, it's the top 10 manliest superheroes. A tongue-in-cheek look at the manliest tough guy superheroes around. It's very silly, and we have some surprises on the list. I'm joined by Chris Ulm and Tom Mason for this list, and frankly, it's kind of stupid, but then again, so am I. On Wednesday, July 4th, to coincide with the release of the new Spider-Man movie, I'll have my review of the 38-issue Steve Ditko and Stan Lee run of Amazing Spider-Man, looking at the roots of that iconic hero, what made him different, and maybe what we've forgotten about the origins and soul of that character. That same day, over at StashMyComics.com, I'll have the second installment of my Dollar Box column, where I look at single-issue comic stories with a cover price of a dollar or less. I'll be looking at Amazing Spider-Man number 6, a classic Stan Lee and Steve Ditko Spider-Man adventure, which also introduced the Lizard, making this tale especially timely, as the Lizard features prominently in the new Spider-Man movie debuting that same week. Finally, on Wednesday, July 11th, I'll post up a panel gallery of Steve Ditko's Amazing Spider Faces. You won't want to miss this, as it's one of the few times that I shut up and let images speak for themselves. I'll showcase a couple dozen individual panels from Steve Ditko's Spider-Man run, blown up big and beautiful, so you can see every detail of Ditko's masterful art, with an emphasis on the bad guys and Spidey's rich supporting cast. So, if you want to see J. Jonah Jameson larger than life and twice as ugly, then this panel gallery is your golden opportunity. That'll take us right up to Comic-Con, where I hope to see you at my Thursday panel or, you know, some other time. And then will come the second installment of this monthly Longbox Graveyard podcast, which I hope to have live on Tuesday, July 17th. I'm still feeling my way forward with this podcast, but my intent is to have a new podcast for you on the third Tuesday of each month, and next month's podcast will be about San Diego Comic-Con, my impressions of the con and the con scene in general, with an after-action report on the Malibu panel and some other stuff. That's the news and the month ahead. Now for this month's feature, Childish Things. This month's feature is Childish Things. Certainly comic books can be considered childish things, and even though I will turn 50 later this year, comics are more important to me today than ever before. And I'm not just talking about allegedly more sophisticated contemporary books aimed at adult audiences either. I'm mostly into all the all-ages books or kids' books of the 1970s and 1980s, and I still very much enjoy them, even though I'm supposedly an adult. Why do these childish things continue to have such a hold on we comics fans of a certain age? In my introduction, I gave you the highlights of my resume. I'm a business owner, a working creative professional. I'm married. I have two boys. Jack is 12 and Miles is 15. I'm a geek through and through, but I can pass for normal. And I do have interests outside of comics, though I don't intend to often discuss them here. For the last year, pretty much all I've read are comic books, and I'm not entirely insensitive to the uncharitable image you may conjure of a 50-year-old guy with a comic book blog and a comics podcast with a pile of comics out in the garage of an undisclosed location. I pour a lot of effort into my blog, and even though it doesn't make me a dime, I watch my traffic numbers at Longbox Graveyard closer than I do my stock portfolio. As I work through this Longbox Graveyard project, I find my interest is deepening in comics, that I'm buying books instead of selling them. I'm writing more and taking on more commitments instead of doing other, more adult things. Now, I haven't lasted 50 years on Earth by being too concerned about what others think of me, but I still want to be that guy. The guy in the comic book shirt who laughs a little too loud or too strangely about things, who's interested only in his deeply obscure comics, who is a fanatic in the sense that Winston Churchill described, being a person who can't change his mind and won't change the subject. To be fair, times have never been better for nerds such as myself. We have a significant percentage of the world's population that's seen Avengers this summer, and they'll be seeing Spider-Man and Batman later on too. Of course, most people will see the movie once, and maybe see it again on DVD, and that's it. They aren't like the rest of us, seeing the movie several times in the theater, or seeing it a midnight show, or seeing it at the end of a 12-hour Ultimate Marvel movie marathon screening all of the Marvel Studios movies to date, which I did. And they don't take to the inner tubes to chirp about the movie and pick apart the differences between the Roy Thomas Hawkeye and the Jeremy Renner Ultimate Avengers-influenced Hawkeye, and they don't leap out of their seats and say, "Holy crap, it's Thanos," during the end credits of the movie, and then run home and unearth their copies of Captain Marvel and Warlock and read them all over again, which I did. So even if Big Bang Theory is the number one show on TV and Avengers is number one at the box office and geek is chic, there's still quite a gulf between kind of liking a superhero picture once every couple summers and being a card-carrying, obsessive comic book fan and purveyor of the Longbox Graveyard comic book blog. And that might make me feel insecure at times, or foolish, or childish. I bear up to it, but I do so defensively, by deciding other people's opinions aren't important to me, defining by negatives rather than positives, which ultimately leads to clannishness, or at worst, isolation. I'm engaging with you here through this podcast, and I have a robust dialogue through my blog and on Twitter, but that is my masked identity. And it's all in the family with you guys. You know, you get it, you feel the same way. It's not out there with the rest of the world. I'll wear a comic book shirt every now and then, but that's as far as I go with public displays of four-color affection. Unlike Alan Scott, I am still in the closet. I'd like to feel better about this hobby, and in casting about for material for this first podcast, I came across a quote that helped me do exactly that. And it connects to a story from my childhood, which I'll tell you in a moment, which amounts to my secret origin and also helps me understand a bit how things have come, or at least are coming, full circle, and how it's all going to be really good, very groovy, for the rest of my life. The quote is from C.S. Lewis, the master fantasist and children's literature writer, the creator of the Chronicles of Narnia, which I've never read because they seemed a bit childish to me, and that makes me a hypocrite, but set that aside. I do respect C.S. Lewis, and this quote from his 1952 essay entitled On Three Ways of Writing for Children, it really blew me away. It's like he's speaking directly to me. It's like I'm speaking to myself, if I was even a fraction of the writer that Lewis was. So here's the quote. I wish I could do a British accent for you, but I won't. Critics who treat adult as a term of approval instead of as a merely descriptive term cannot be adult themselves. To be concerned about being grown up, to admire the grown up because it is grown up, to blush at the suspicion of being childish, these things are the marks of childhood and adolescence. And in childhood and adolescence, they are, in moderation, healthy symptoms. Young things ought to want to grow. But to carry on into middle life, or even into early manhood, this concern about being an adult is a mark of really arrested development. When I was 10, I read fairy tales in secret and would have been ashamed if I'd been found doing so. Now that I am 50, I read them openly. When I became a man, I put away childish things, including the fear of childishness and the desire to be very grown up. End quote. And good for Lewis. I love his definition of childishness and adulthood. Later in that same essay, he says, getting older doesn't mean replacing childhood interests with adult ones. He suggests that growing up means acquiring new interests, but also keeping the old ones and enjoying them in new ways. In doing so, he articulates a philosophy of childishness, which might also be a credo for we few, we happy few, we band of nerds and comics geeks, where we can accept that continuing to love the things that matter to you as a child makes you a more fully realized adult and not a child at all. I love this quote. I wish I'd discovered it sooner, and not just when I was preparing this podcast. I wish I'd discovered it, say, when I was 12, which might have made that age even more profound and pivotal for me than it was in fact. In my very first Longbox Graveyard blog, I wrote that the golden age of comics is 12. It's not an original sentiment, but I think it is true. I think many of the things we fall deeply in love with when we are 12 or so will imprint on us the way they were at that age. The great author Ray Bradbury recently passed away, and in an obituary, I read Bradbury liked to recount the story of meeting a carnival magician, Mr. Electrico, back in 1932. At the end of his performance, Electrico reached out to the 12-year-old Ray Bradbury, touched the boy with his sword, and commanded, "Live forever." Bradbury later said, "I decided that was the greatest idea I ever heard. I started writing every day. I never stopped." So, if Bradbury could be 12 years old for his entire life, why shouldn't we? I was 12 in 1974, and I could tell you all about the comics from that year. And even if those books were inferior, I am always going to regard them with sunlit nostalgia because I was 12, and they were so cool. But even at 12, I was looking over my shoulder and wondering when I'd have to give up these childish things. The summer I got into comic books was the summer between my 6th and 7th grade years. In those days, it was the transition between elementary school and junior high school, or middle school, as we call it now here in the States. All sorts of mature diversions were just over the horizon, more demanding academics, sports, and girls. Where would comics fit in with these things? No one wants to be the class geek, and man, I could see it coming. I might have thrown my geeky loves aside if I wasn't rescued by C.S. Lewis that summer. Well, not C.S. Lewis, obviously. A, he'd been dead for a decade. And as I said, I didn't encounter his quote until just a couple days ago. But I did meet a figure that summer that shared Lewis's philosophy towards childish things. That man was Forrest J. Ackerman. My contemporaries will recognize that name instantly. For the rest of you, Ackerman, or Forry, was the grandfatherly editor-in-chief of Famous Monsters magazine, a pulpy black-and-white movie monster magazine that was my lifeline to the world of the fantastic all through the 1970s. The magazine is still in print, though under new ownership, and Forry has unfortunately gone to the big magazine office in the sky. But in 1974, Forry was a superstar, putting out his uber-cool monster magazine every month, thrilling not only me, but also other obscure fans with names like John Landis and Joe Dante, Rick Baker, and Stephen King. As much as I loved comics, I loved horror movies even more in those days, and I was a devoted reader of Mr. Ackerman's magazine. One lazy summer day in 1974, I was leafing through the phone book. Remember phone books? With a vague idea of somehow finding Ackerman, because I was living in Hollywood, California, and I knew from the magazine that Forry lived in Horrorwood. And son of a gun, there was his number. I summoned up my courage, and I dialed. Remember dialing? And after a couple rings, the line picked up, and there was Forry's voice. "Hello," it said. "You've reached the Acker Mansion." And I started stammering something about being a reader and gee whiz and whatever, but Forey kept talking, and then I realized that this was a technological miracle. This was an answering machine. No one had an answering machine in 1974, let me tell you. Anyway, that was Forey's voice, and he invited me to leave a message after the rocket lifted off, and he counted down 10, 9, 8, 7, while this rocket engine roared to life, and then beep! And then again, I stammered out a gee whiz about how I was just a kid and I loved the magazine, etc., etc., and then I heard another voice. Hello, young reader! And this time it was loud and present and live. Forey was there. He heard me. He picked up. I don't remember the conversation. I was too excited. He was kind and friendly. He took time with me, and probably to get off the phone, he gave me a friendly, non-committal invitation to come visit the Acker Mansion someday, and then he was gone. And I was flying! I shared a monster obsession with a school friend in those days, so of course I told him about the call. And he went nuts when he found out that I'd been invited to Forey's house. It didn't matter to him that Forey was just being polite. This was an invitation, and I was going to call him back, and I was going to go to the house, and of course he was going with me. So a week later, I screwed up my courage, and I called again, and Forey answered again. And I told him how he'd invited me, and he seemed to remember, or did a good job of pretending he remembered. And I put my mom on the line, and they got it lined up. And that Saturday, we rolled up to Forey's place in Hollywood and spent the morning exploring the sprawling basement of the Acker Mansion, an absolute Aladdin's cave of horror movie memorabilia. This was a couple years after the big Sylmar earthquake in 1972, and a lot of Forey's collection still hadn't recovered. I suspect it was a jumble at the best of times, but stuff was especially thrown around that day. You have to understand that Forey might have been the first real science fiction fan. He'd collected stuff since he was a kid, and he never threw anything away. Books, magazines, pulps, movie stills, and most famously movie props from the old pros that he'd met down through the years. We're talking original models by Ray Harryhausen, Bela Lugosi's cape and Dracula ring, the freaking robot from Metropolis. It was all there, all authentic, all irreplaceable. All out where you could touch it and experience it in this crazy guy's magnificent basement. Forey was a bit older than I am today when he hosted us, in his late 50s. And he took time, still, to visit with 12-year-old me, and then he turned us loose to explore his basement, and he got on the phone and visited with other people who came to the house that day, worked on his magazine, he just kind of held court. Most of it went over my head, but I felt I made a little connection with him, and I got an autographed photo, and I have a story to tell the rest of my life. That visit is not without regrets. I wish I had the initiative to ask Forey if I could come back, help him clean up and organize his place, hang around, become an intern, learn the magazine business, meet the people who made monster movies, maybe move into that business myself. But, you know, I was just a kid, and I was pretty young, and who thinks that way when they're a kid? No, I never saw Forey again, except one time. But that day in 1974 was still a pivotal, critical day for me in my life. The next time I saw Forey was in 2006, just a couple years before he left us, at Worldcon in Anaheim, California. I was co-creator of Dark Watch, the video game then, and we tried to get it on the Yugo ballot, and that didn't work out. But I still went to Worldcon and attended the Yugo ceremony. The ceremony was kind of low rent, but it was authentic and really very nice. I got to see Robert Silverberg there, and John Scalzi got an award for Best New Writer, and he gave a very gracious speech. Robert Charles Wilson won a Hugo for Spin, which is a great book that you should read. And Forrest Ackerman was there. And he got a warm round of applause for basically creating fandom. And that was nice to see. After the show, we were back at the Hilton, and everyone was piled up waiting for the elevators. And over to the side, I saw Forey in his wheelchair with his assistant, and I decided, you know what? It's time to say hello again. He was all alone. It was like the waves parted for me. This was my moment. I walked over to him, and he looked up, and he smiled, and I could see he was very old and very tired, so I kept it short. I shook his hand. I remember his hands, how age-spotted they were. They reminded me of my father's hands near the end of his life. And I held his hand, and I said something like, Mr. Ackerman, you won't remember me, but when I was 12, you invited me up to the Acker Mansion, and it was one of the greatest days of my life. And when you did that, you showed a little kid that you could be both an adult and a kid at heart. That you didn't have to grow up and put aside your love of fantastic things, that you could make your way in the world editing magazines or making movies. And in large part because of that example, I've gone on to have a rich and satisfying creative career, writing comic books and now making video games. And here's the important thing. Every once in a while, my phone rings. Or I get an email from a kid who wants to know how to do it, how they can break in and make games like I do. And because you took time with me when I was a boy, I always remember and pay it forward. And I answer their mail, or I talk to them on the phone, or I have them out to the office, and I encourage them to follow their dreams, and I let them know that they can keep their crazy, childish, geeky obsessions, and it's okay. It can even be a great thing. Thank you, sir, for this wonderful thing you did for me. Forey smiled, and he patted my hand. I think he understood most of it, and I think it mattered to him. I'm sure he heard that kind of thing all the time. But I meant it, and I'm so blessed that I got a chance to tell that to Forey that night. A couple years later, he was gone, but now I can see how the rock he tossed in a pond for me when I was 12 continues to send out ripples through my life and through my professional life, through my parenting life with my boys, through my hobby life, and now through my blogging life and this podcast, sharing this story with you. And I can see how it has come full circle, making even more sense now that this sentiment from C.S. Lewis has come to my attention. He's helped me understand that Forey wasn't just a grown-up kid or a geek or a nerd or any of those things. He was just a fully realized adult who had grown on top of the person he was as a child. And those things had led him into an amazing life that touched other people. Maybe in some small way, I'm part of that same tradition now. Maybe that's a tradition I can continue. Maybe that's what Longbox Graveyard is supposed to be about, my blog and this podcast. Maybe I'm supposed to reach out to other people, young and old, and share these insights and say, you know what, it's okay. It's even a good thing to have a PhD-level knowledge of comic books, to know what MODOK stands for, to be able to list the capabilities of each new mark and model of Ultron through the ages. It might even be a noble thing or an important thing. It is certainly a childish thing, but I'll tell you what, it's not a bad thing, not at all. Thank you, Mr. C.S. Lewis, for your insight, and thank you especially, Forey, for showing me a kindness when I was young. I hope you're enjoying some great old times and tales with Bella and Boris and Lon. You are deeply missed and still very much alive for me. As are comics. They're still very important to me, maybe more than ever before. Thanks for listening to that. I'll just about wrap up this first show, but first a little more business, starting with my plug of the month. Each month I'll do one plug for a product or another site. This month is for StashMyComics.com, a site offering a free and pretty nifty customizable comic database where you can index your collection. It's run by some friendly people, and they have a growing and diverse blog over there too, edited by Jason Newcomb and a sharp staff of writers. I'm very pleased that they've invited me to be part of their site. That's where I write my monthly dollar box column and some other stuff. Please check them out for news and reviews. Unlike Longbox Graveyard, they even cover comics from the current century, so they're not perfect. That's www.stashmycomics.com. Please check them out. And that brings us to the end of this first Longbox Graveyard podcast. Thanks for sticking with me. I look forward to your feedback. Now, where to find me? It's more like where not to find me. If you're part of a social media service, the chances are that I am there too. Wherever you find me, I want to hear your comments about this podcast and about the Longbox Graveyard blog. Do a Google search for Longbox Graveyard and you will find everywhere I am, including a couple places I've forgotten about, like MySpace. I forgot all about that page, and I'm sorry. For the active channels, try any of the following. You can find me on Twitter as @LBoxGraveyard, @LBoxGraveyard. Follow me, tweet at me, and I will reply. There are Longbox Graveyard pages on both Facebook and Google+ that are updated every day. They're also very lonely. Leave me a message there. Convince me to continue using those services. You can find Longbox Graveyard on Pinterest, where I've archived hundreds, by this time maybe thousands of images that I've used on the blog. They're categorized by hero or comic book trope. Pinterest is a new site. It's fun. Check it out if you haven't already. And if you're on that site, follow my boards. Let's share some images together. You can find me at StashMyComics.com, where I write the monthly dollar box feature, and a couple other spot columns as well. Leave me a comment over there, and if I see it, I'll reply. You can email to me directly. My address is, can you guess? It's longboxgraveyard@gmail.com. Of course, you can leave me comments here at We Talk Podcasts. And the father of the waters for all my social media presence is my Longbox Graveyard blog, www.longboxgraveyard.com. Every comment there receives a comment and reply. So please drop me a line to say hello, or tell me how I'm doing, or tell me to shut the heck up. Not that that'll do any good, but I do want to hear your comments. All right, wrapping up, special thanks to Mo Christensen and Keith Kalbeck and all the guys at We Talk Podcasts for extending the opportunity to bring this Longbox Graveyard podcast to you. If this podcast worked at all, it is in large part due to Mo's expertise in putting it together and distributing it, and his encouragement that I do it in the first place. Mo told me that I have a voice made for radio. I'm not certain about that. I know I have a face made for radio. This has been fun. Thanks, Mo. Thanks also to my many readers, followers, and friends on the blog and on Twitter that have supported my work this past year. I do deeply appreciate each and every one of you. I hope you will add this podcast to your nerd rotation, subscribe through iTunes, or bookmark the We Talk podcast site, and look for me there the third Tuesday of each month. And also please try the other excellent podcasts at that site about comics and other subjects. Yes, there are other subjects in the world. If you like what you heard here today, please tell your friends to check out the podcast as well. I will talk to you again in July. In the meantime, remember my panel at San Diego Comic-Con Thursday from 2 to 3 p.m. in room 32AB for the Malibu Comics Retrospective. It should be a great hour, and I hope to see you there. For Longbox Graveyard, this is Paul O'Connor. I'm signing off. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you in the Funny Papers.
Interest in sports or school lectures and in class. I dreamed all day about a rock and roll weekend. Oh, and a girl in the front of the room, so close yet so far, you know, she never seemed to notice that this silly schoolboy crush wasn't just pretend. Life goes by so fast. You only want to do what you think is right. Close your eyes and it's past. Story of my life. Story of my life. La 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 la. Story of my life. I went down my whole neighborhood. The faces have all changed. There's no one there left. Talked to in the pool. All my love as a kid is now a 7-Eleven. Oh, I went downtown to look for a job. I had no training, no experience to speak of, and I looked at the holes in my jeans. I turned and headed back. Life goes by so fast. You only want to do what you think is right. Close your eyes and it's past. Story of my life. Story of my life. La 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 la. Story of my life. And good times come and good times go. I only wish the good times would last a little longer. And I think about the good times we had and why we had to end. Oh,
twisted at the edge of my bed. I strum my guitar and I sing an outlaw love song, thinking about what you're doing now and when you're coming back. Oh, life goes by so fast. The only one to do what you think is right. Close your eyes in this past story of